The other thing I was thinking too, I'd love to know your thoughts on this, is like, I was looking at writers, you know, writers have writer websites. And it was, I posted actually a little poll about this on Threads, and I just like asked people, like, how many people in the last month have clicked on your author website? You know what I mean? And the numbers I was getting, I mean, it's just not happening. So the reality is people are spending money on their Squarespace, you know, on their Wix and things like that to get that one or two people that click on their website. And I was like, I used to have an author website as well. But then I was like, you know what? It's just not getting, I mean, yeah, people can find me, but I was like, how can I build something that people actually turn to? You know what I mean? And I think an author website, it's kind of hard to do that. But if I offer a website that has different services, like, hey, we have our podcasts, we have a webinar we do to kind of give you some ideas for turning your poetry into a course or a workshop. We have a blog. We have all these sorts of things that kind of act to get people to actually click onto the site, you know, and in a relatively short amount of time, we're able to get more people viewing our website, you know, than most writers are able to get clicking on theirs. You know what I mean?
Right. So here's the question. Would you yourself go to somebody else's author website for what?
That's the question. Why would I go there?
Introducing the Poet Life Podcast. Go check it out today on your favorite platforms, including iTunes, Apple Music, and the website, thepoetlife.com.
Hey, it's Christoph Jenkins, founder and creator of The Poet Life, and obviously the host of The Poet Life Podcast. And we're in a cool situation right now because, you know, I talk about collaboration a lot. It helps you grow. It helps others grow. And we are in the midst of a mutual collaboration here with Jeff Anderson of Diversus. And we literally just finished the live recording on Diversus Poetry show on his platform, and literally right after we're doing it right now. And so, which means the show that I just did with him is currently out there. And obviously, since you're watching it, this is out there. So, Jeff, man, what's going on? How you doing?
Hey, I'm all good, man. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate this opportunity. It's been great working with you.
For sure, man. I love to connect with people in motion.
Facts.
Does that make sense?
Yes, because most people are not.
Right. It is. It's like, you know, all right, cool. He's already moving. Let's move along together, right? And so let's kind of go from the beginning, man. The Poet Life, we recently just got on Threads, and I'm enjoying myself on Threads.
I'm a big fan. For us, it's been huge. It's aside from YouTube, it's the platform I spend the most time on for Diversus.
Right. And the most simplistic to get great feedback and response and growth out of, from my perspective.
The engagement, especially for the numbers of people you have, like starting off for the size, right. I haven't seen anything like this in a long time.
I don't know if it's because it's new and they're just pushing people to you or what. I don't care. Just like I spoke on your platform, I don't focus too heavily on algorithm. I see what it is at the moment. All right, cool. It's working well. Let's double down on it. And on Threads, matter of, hey, we follow poets. Oh, you do? Like, comment, you know. Mm-hmm. And so how's it been for you on Threads?
Very mutual. I would say the people that I've seen, if you're a person that's really interested in follower numbers, that's not really a metric I care a whole lot about, but I know some people are. So if you're really obsessed with like follower numbers, what I've seen be successful for people is, I mean, no surprise, really consistent posting. Really consistent. We're talking multiple times an hour, multiple times a day. So we're looking to like 20 to like 50 posts a day. Some people are doing.
People I've seen
do that seem in general to have high follower numbers. But we also need to keep in mind, I don't know about your experience, but high follower numbers from what I've seen we're not even talking like 10,000, hundreds of thousands. A lot of times, if someone has like 5,000-6,000 followers on Threads, that seems to be pretty high from what I've seen. Sure. But that could also just be because on Threads, what I've seen is that it seems a lot easier to find people who have that like sub 1,000 follower mark.
Yes. Yeah. Now, the question is, why are we talking about Threads? And we're talking about Threads right now because that's where we met. We met on Threads, you know, and I went down the rabbit hole of Diversus and it have been enjoying myself ever since, you know, and mainly because I see myself and I see the poet life a lot in Diversus. And I was like, oh, man, OK, that's what I'm talking about. I got somebody flowing with me. You know,
let's go. I hear that.
Yeah,
I hear that.
Yeah. And then Jeff joined the Poetry Business Network. And that was huge for me. I'll be honest with you. The reason why I say it was huge, because I'll see movers and shakers. Right. And appreciate them, you know, for all the work that they do. But I don't know if it is pride, competition, whatever it might be. Mm. But for whatever reason, no matter what you're offering, they won't tap in and fellowship or join your whatever you got going on because they have their own thing. And I get it, but I appreciate it, your humility in that regard.
To
join our community and to be active and not just be looking around.
There's space for everybody. So not to kind of like jump into stuff real fast, but Diversus, I would say up until about 4 or 5 months ago has kind of been the side project for me. It's like, I want to be connected with poetry, but my main thing, I'm a teacher. I teach ESL. I focus on American English pronunciation and that's my main channel. I have two channels that are really dedicated to that. And it's not something what the experience you're describing is not limited to the poetry scene. It's pretty much everywhere because something that I would do on my channel is I would reach out to other pronunciation channels, which like no one is doing, which is wild. And I would have them on as guests. And like, for instance, one thing we do, we would have a live stream where people would send us pronunciation files and then we would offer feedback. No one else is doing this. And in fact, some people I would reach out to, they'd be suspicious. They would be like, but you're just, they weren't directly saying it, but in their minds, I could see the gears are like, what's the catch here? Like, why are we doing this? When the reality is, guys, there's like 6 billion people in the world.
There's enough space.
You don't need all 6 billion of them. You don't even need 1 billion of them. You don't even need 1 million of them. You need like the amount you need to sustain yourself is so incredibly small based on the scale of the world that like there's room for everyone to succeed. And in fact, by working together, we actually make it easier for ourselves to succeed.
Yeah. Yeah. No. So, and that's like I said, I could tell your mindset in that regard. I didn't get suspicious. Is he in here in the community trying to copy what I'm doing? And for me, even if that was the case, I wouldn't trip off of it because I have my own ideas. Even if somebody tried to copy what I got going on, it would not be the same.
I think you're seeing a lot of that discussion now, especially with like AI generated stuff. You know, like the stuff that's not going to survive is the stuff that's low effort. That is not, you don't have to input a lot of yourself into the people who are going to be able to really make sure that they themselves and their own voice is able to stand. Those are the people who are going to make it out.
Yeah. Yeah. But see, to the point in the conversation that we had on your platform, and I encourage you all, if you're watching this, to check out that episode because that's like part one. This is part two. All right.
I just want to highlight really quick too. We're going to be cutting that up and referencing shorter sections because there was so much. So Christoph gave us so much. So throughout the week, we'll be leading up to this podcast episode as well. So there's going to be lots to take. Sorry for interrupting.
No, you're good. I love that, man. I don't know if you walk in tell the synergy and the chemistry here, man. But I can promise you this, this won't be the first and only, well, this will be the first, but this won't be the only, you know, collaboration and synergy that we bring forth to you all, because I enjoy this conversation. I enjoy the camaraderie, you know, and the motion. I'll keep saying that word because it's far in between that you'll find people willing to do the work.
Yes.
Right? I can tell that you're in the lab in silence or with music, but you're back there doing the work, you know, and that's why your presentation is so crisp and clean. And you look, you got the hat on that says Diverses.
That we out here, man.
Listen, it says a lot. You mentioned the same thing when I came on your platform just a minute ago. Oh, you're swagged up and ready to go.
Yeah.
That says and means a lot to so many people. That says, oh, he invests.
It's commitment.
He invests in himself. He commits to the thing that he's creating. And that alone says, okay, if he has an event, then I know that's going to be awesome. Because if he invests in what he has on, or on his head, on his body with a t-shirt or a polo shirt, then I know that the event that he puts together is going to be decorated. He's going to put some time, money, and effort into it.
That's really interesting you say that, you know, because some people see like the branding and stuff like that, and it can be a turnoff as they put on their Nike hat, or as they put on their Jordans, or as they put on whatever it may be, you know, like we're so willing to take the work of others and put it on ourselves. But when it comes to doing our own work ourselves and owning it, you don't see that as often, right?
Yeah, I get that question often. Why are you always wearing Poet Life? And then my response is with a face like, why wouldn't I? You know what I mean? Like, 100%. Like, why would I put more stock into somebody else's brand and not my own when me just walking around with it on sparks conversation and new opportunities?
It's that. For people who are also practical minded, it's a write-off. For people, like, if I can buy clothes and pay less for them, I mean,
right?
I gotta make more designs.
Yeah, but not only that though, the clothes that you buy that has your likeness on it becomes your uniform.
Facts,
right? And so your uniform becomes a write-off because it's related to your job, but also, when you take your uniform to the cleaners, it's a write-off as well.
This is the thing. Like, it's, you're building financially through this. You're building awareness through this. Because if you're walking around and you're not wearing the Poet Life, no one knows about the Poet Life. You know what I mean?
Opportunities.
It's, you know, so it's, this is building awareness, is starting discussions. These are really key things that it shows, like you've mentioned, it shows your commitment.
Yeah.
Own it. If you're in it, own it. Like, I don't, when people think of your name, what do they think of? The thing is that, like, I was listening, I don't know if you like follow it, like the Future, like Social Proof, or like other podcasts like that.
Yeah,
okay.
Dave is my guy.
Like, the thing is, everyone has a personal brand. You might not want a personal brand, but everyone has a personal brand. Because if you're that guy that's always showing up late, you know, to the club, that's your brand now. You show up early, people are going to be like, oh, you're different. What's wrong? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's part of your brand. Like, if you're the person that, like, if at home, you know, you're the person that you walk through the door and you immediately go to your office and you don't even say hi to your wife. That's your brand, you know? So, like, you may not like the word brand, and you may not like the concept of, you know, business concepts, but that doesn't mean they're not a part of what you do.
You may not know the word brand, but you know the language you speak, and that word is reputation. That's your MO, your modus operandi. Right?
And I was like, yeah, 100%. So all this stuff comes together. This is how much do you want to own it? I want to own it.
That right there, the two words you just said, like with exclamation, right? Own it. That's like a double entendre. Like commit to it, but also own it. Like it's all about ownership.
It is.
Like
it is.
You literally can own the clothes that you wear and bring value to them, just like Balenciaga has brought value to their brand. When it first came out, I'm sure they were like, I can't even say Balenciaga. Why would somebody wear that? Blah, 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 blah. But look at it now. Like, I'm walking down the street and in Georgetown in D.C., and somebody just yelled out, hey, Poet Life. Like, I think half of the people that know about Poet Life don't even know my real name. Like, my name has become Poet Life. And to your point with those two words of own it, we've just got approved now that we owned the Poet Life as a trademark.
Congratulations. That's what's up. Let's
go. That's another level of ownership to where nobody can take it away from us. Right? People use the hashtag. People have been using the hashtag of Poet Life before we even took claim to it, right? For years, but no one thought to own it.
It's interesting you mentioned trademarks. I have a phrase I want to trademark. I have to look into.
Don't say it.
I'm not gonna tell you. I was just it's just funny that it came up, because I was like, I need to get in on that, because I think it would be very good.
But well, let me get into you, Jeff, man, because you know we can keep on going with this conversation. I love it, bro. So Jeff, man, when did poetry come in for you? Like, what stage of life, what age, where were you when poetry said hi?
Yeah, very early elementary school. For those who don't know my age, I've been out of elementary school for decades now. So it started early on. I was very fortunate. I think a lot of writers, a lot of poets have that, you know, that one teacher that kind of encouraged them. I certainly had that in eighth grade. I didn't take it like super, super seriously, but it was consistent. You know, like I was, when AIM was a thing, you know, you could do like your little like profiles. Like I would like put like some poems in there.
Right.
When I went to college, we had a group of friends that every Monday we had what we called like pizza and poetry. So this is back when Domino's had like the 5-5-5 deal. I don't know if they still got that going. Basically there were three of us. We each get our pizza, and then like we'd share poems that we had written during the week, and we'd also share some poems that we had read during the week too. Definitely more of like page poetry than like spoken word stuff. And yeah, one thing leading to another, just focused on craft. I've been fortunate enough to attend a couple different fellowships. I attended Kowloo. The last year Kowloo was open, so we got to work with like Vibe Francis, Greg Pardlow. That just completely changed the way I write. And then more recently, I've been a Cave Canem fellow for the last 2 years, and most likely will be graduating from that this summer. So that's kind of where we're at right now.
Yeah. All right. That's dope. So you said elementary school, and it's so many parallels with you and I, outside of you, me being black and you not, you know.
I mean, my dad's black. We here.
Are you mixed?
Yep. It's look, my hair is like super, when it's short, it gets super straight. But when it's long, it's straight.
Oh, okay. All right. Gotcha. Sweet. Like, yeah. As you all see, we literally just got to know each other. We're getting to know each other in these past week or two. You know what I'm saying? And so it's just a dope situation. But I say parallels because I started writing poetry in the first grade. So elementary,
there you go.
You know, we were given an assignment to create, not just write poetry, but to create a poetry book.
Hey.
From scratch, from the okay. binding to the gluing the paper in to writing the poetry, to writing the mm-hmm. copyright page, the whole nine, the back of the back cover with the your bio, whatever, your mm-hmm. photo on there. Mm-hmm. And from there, that just like changed my whole brain chemistry and was like, whoa, what in the world? So I've been writing page poetry for weddings, for every funeral that I've attended related to my family, you know, father, grandfather, uncle, like, you know what I mean? I was the go-to poet.
Yes, you're the family poet. Yes.
The poet,
I
right?
That. Yes.
And it's that's how it is. And I can, you know, just saying that I can tell why. Or understand why so many poets say, like, you know, my friends and family don't support me. Not to say that mine didn't, but I can understand why, because you're the only poet in the family, but also they may not understand poetry to the level that you do. And it's so funny that you take poetry so serious and we don't, and like you're like a unicorn, and we just don't understand you.
Mm-hmm. It's a unicorn that is also traumatic because you're bringing up things that happened in the family that they're like, hey, like, don't bring that out.
Right,
or even worse, like, that's not what happened. And it's like, but shoot, it's hard to separate fact from honest for people that don't do poetry.
Yeah. Yeah, I found that that whole element of, you know, my friends and family don't support me. My perspective on that is most of those people have been, one, they know how talented you are, but they've mm-hmm. been waiting for you to get focused mm-hmm. and consistent. Mm-hmm. And commit to one thing, because, you know, we're creatives and we hop from one shiny penny to the next, or shiny idea to the next, right? Mm-hmm. And so mm-hmm. it's like, all right, I can't, the family member or the friend is like, all right, I can't put all my support because next week it might be something different. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So they're mm-hmm. like waiting for you to get professional with it. So I can go and tell this person and that person that, yo, you need to connect with my cousin, but they can't put their name on you. If they put their name on you and then next week you're doing something else, you know that's what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So that's a part mm-hmm. of the, they don't support me, that a lot of creatives, not just poets, but entrepreneurs, you know, mm-hmm. We've hopped from one business to the next, but once we start to get serious about one thing and we start to grow that one thing, we'll mm-hmm. start to see the support come from those loved ones that have mm-hmm. been waiting for us to get serious all along.
Mm-hmm. It's them. It's interesting because there's this fear that's often involved with this discussion as well, I think, in terms of, oh, how will my family respond? I mean, Gary Vee mentions this all the time, you know, like we can't operate on fear. We can't make a decision based on fear of what the response is going to be from some random kid we went to high school with, or with our own parents, or things like that. You know, we can't let people have in their minds who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be hard for us to be willing to change that impression.
Yeah.
Which ultimately just kind of holds us back.
Yeah.
So we have to be careful.
So how did you figure it out? Right. Like, you from elementary school to teens, right? What was the transition for you to say, you know, I want to do more with this?
Mm-hmm. So I went to Kenyon College, which has a really good English program. It's the whole reason why I picked the school. I was an English major and an Italian major. And that certainly helped. So, you know, you're at a school, liberal arts, the English department was great. Lots of different opportunities for taking different types of poetry classes. I think also, you know, those kind of 18, 19 years old, that's when I was finding, when I found, again, that group of people that they're like, oh, these are people I enjoy hanging out with, and they do poetry. Because my high school, I went to, I'm not Catholic, I went to an all-boy Catholic high school outside, right outside of Philly. Not, believe it or not, this may be surprising, not the best scene to be announcing to people that, hey, I do poetry, you know, just not at that time, at that demographic, just not the thing to be doing. So again, it was mostly stuff that I'd done on the side. But then I think my college experience really kind of opened the door to different opportunities.
Got it.
Especially from like a craft perspective.
Right. And their appreciation for it.
Mm, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Was there a poetry scene on campus?
There was not, you know, there wasn't like an open mic. It's interesting. Like Kenyon's known for its creative writing department, for undergrads. There's no graduate school. It's just undergrad. And so there's poets there, there's writers there, but it's not like there was no open mic. There was there were a couple lit journals from the school. There was, I mean, a lot of people, if you're into poetry, published poetry, you may have heard like the Kenyon Review. So like the Kenyon Review is there, but it's very separated from the school.
Mm.
You know, the Kenyon Review is kind of its own thing.
Gotcha.
You know,
got it.
They would bring in poets to like, you know, do readings and things like that. But I wouldn't personally say it was something that was super overt.
Sure. So yeah, same at my university, at Norfolk State University. There were poets and there were poetry events, you know, mm-hmm. but nothing really consistent to like really dive yeah. into. Yeah.
Like there's no Cupsy team, you know, there's no like slam poet scene or anything right. like that.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So let me ask you this about the art departments, the mm-hmm. literary departments, the degrees, right? Mm-hmm. And here's my thing about those. I understand when parents don't want their child to get degrees in the arts, mainly because mm-hmm. those degree departments don't have any classes to where they teach you how to sustain the art. No business sure. classes. It's just get better at the craft, but they don't teach you the path to excel in. Is that how it was at Kenyon?
You know, what I would say is that I 100% agree with you. I think you, especially with advanced degrees, but I would also make the argument that, you know, if you're studying, like if you're like a math major, you're not necessarily learning how to learn math as business. I think the thing is though, it's easier with jobs that are already out there to take on those sorts of skill sets. Whereas like, if you're like, hey, I do creative writing, people are like,
right. There is already an established lane mm-hmm. for mathematicians mm-hmm. or options mm-hmm. to go into that mm-hmm. have a salary.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
You know, yeah. So I think, I mean, yeah, very, there was nothing business related. It was, I think a lot of people studying for the English degrees are people thinking about, oh, I like English, so I'll become a professor. You know, it's just a very tried and true for the last, you know, 300 years of, I'm just going to focus on academia as the root. You know what I mean?
And then it becomes a cycle of student, professor, yeah. student, professor.
I mean, it's been that way for so long now. You know, it's, and maybe out of necessity, you know, it's, I think it's only within the last, honestly, it was in the last like 5-10 years that it's suddenly becoming readily apparent that there are alternatives out there
yeah.
if you want there to be.
Yes.
You know, and if you're willing to work on it. But yeah, now in terms of like just business training, finance training, things like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting in that way, man. All right. So where are we now? Where as far as timeline wise for you, the elementary, to the high school, to the college, right? So where is Jeff as it relates to seeing that it's a possibility to take poetry to the next level?
Honestly, I'm not thinking poetry business for several years. So
got it.
Just kind of fast track what happens after, like, we moved my wife and, well, at the time girlfriend, we moved down to Texas. We would go down to San Antonio for a couple of years. I get my master's degree from UTSA. And I'm doing ESL. So TESOL, yeah. ESL. Yeah. So teaching English as a second language. And so I'm basically working at a language center. I know you spent some time abroad teaching, which is cool. But I'm basically working at a domestic language center. And I think one of the things you see with ESL is most people who do ESL domestically, if you work at a language center, probably long-term your goal is to move abroad. I mean, it's like we had fun down in Texas. We were down for a couple of years. But then everyone moves because everyone's going to like Saudi Arabia, Oman, or Korea and things like that, you know? So, you know, my girlfriend, you know, we were deciding that like, oh, we want to kind of take the next step. So we're, you know, staying domestic. It would be much harder for her to get a job abroad. So we stay in the US. We move back to Ohio. And I think once we move back to Ohio, I'd still been writing, but things started to get a little bit more active. Columbus, we moved to Columbus. Columbus pre-pandemic had a very active poetry scene. Super, super active. Pretty much every single day of the week, you could find a poetry show. Every single day of the week. So, you know, if you don't have kids and you're in your 20s, you could just be poeting out, going to stage to stage to stage. This is also around the time too when I was able to transfer to a different language center and take on more of a director role. And on the weekends I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna start teaching English online on the side. So like just right around 2016 I started kind of doing some online teaching just to kind of get some credentials online. Wasn't thinking of doing it full-time. But then it turned out to be super beneficial because a couple years later, our language center closed because, you know, I'm working at ESL and you're probably aware of this, but ESL, I think, is one of the first fields that gets what happens globally. So like if oil prices go down, oh, cool. You just lost your Saudi Arabian markets. You lost your Middle Eastern markets. You lost Brazil. If the dollar goes up, okay, cool. You just lost China. You know, it's like you're very much tied to the global economy with ESL. And so our language center shut down. So I had to shift all my operations online. And I promise this connects to poetry because basically I started, you know, my poetry YouTube. I started my teaching YouTube channels and things like that. I started learning how to make video. I learned, oh, camera. Oh, this is how you get the blurry background. Oh, cool. Like microphone, sound, lighting. Like I started learning all these things that are really helpful for video. And I started doing a poetry podcast, I would say maybe about 2 years ago with a friend of mine who I met through the poetry scene. And then I would say within the last, again, like 4 or 5 months, we're like, you know what? I've learned a lot about video production and sound in lighting. Maybe it's time to apply all the lessons I've learned from like my pronunciation businesses, because right at this point it's just me, you know, everything I know about finding clients and things like that is things I've learned just from running my pronunciation business. Let's start applying some of this to poetry. So that's kind of the quick rundown of how we got here.
That's interesting.
It's time to create an unforgettable experience at your next event with The Poet Life by booking a keynote poet. Poets excite your audience with motivating messages, charismatic delivery, colorful rhythm, powerful prose, and heart-filled stories with a style of spoken word that's tailored specifically to your event. The Poet Life has keynote poets in your city of all ages and backgrounds.
Visit thepoetlife.com to learn more and book your poet today.
That would make sense though. And I like that mindset because that's how you see the possibilities in poetry. Mm-hmm. That's how you make the connection. English, TESOL, ESL, pronunciation. When in your poetry, you have to enunciate. You have to make sure people hear your words, and you can leverage poetry to even teach them.
Oh, you can. So much. Ooh. Like there's so many. I'm not big into slam poetry, but one of the things that I think you see a lot with slam, just having taught pronunciation, it's really interesting seeing what people do on slam, because 99% of people doing slam feel the same. They're all doing the same way. They're yelling, first of all. They're talking fast, and then they'll do their really dramatic pause, and then they'll go back to yelling really fast. You know, it's like everyone's using the kind of the same cadences and rhythms, where it's like it's the same thing working with my students. You know, English is really focused on contrast. So there's times where you really need to go fast, but there's times you need to slow down. There's times you go loud, there's times you go quiet. There's variations you can do with your pitch to take things low. Like there's so many more tools that your voice can do that I've learned just by teaching pronunciation that can certainly carry over to, you know, delivering a poem on stage in a non-traditional way that is still very, very, and maybe even more so effective.
That's so good. And now you stand out as a trainer, as a pronunciation trainer, because you're a unicorn in a positive way, right? Because the others in your lane, they do it the regular way, right? But what fun would it be to learn it through poetry?
It's interesting. I've thought about that. I don't want to say I've never thought about that. My angle, we're at kind of an interesting position with the verses. It's very business minded, but we're not quite a business yet in the sense of there's some little things I've done. Like we've earned money. We're hosting a poetry residency, you know, so we had applications for that. There's little like video projects I've done for poets. I think right now because I'm still at the same time trying to get the poetry, like the pronunciation business at a point where it's good, you know, it sustains me, but I want it to be able to also sustain itself without me being directly involved the time. Sure. You know what I mean? So often the verses is often kind of getting whatever time I'm not doing teaching is kind of getting left with that. In addition, you know, to having a wife and having a kid and things like that, you know? Yeah. So my whole thing right now is awareness. I want to build the platform. I want people to see that we are a resource. I want to put ourselves in a position of authority in the field, you know, so people turn to us like, oh, this is an idea. Let's check out here. Oh, this is an idea. This is, you know, so when people think of us, they're like, okay, poetry, I'm going to learn about craft. I'm going to learn about business. Turning to Jeff in the verses. And the other thing I was thinking too, I'd love to know your thoughts on this is, like I was looking at writers, you know, writers have writer websites, and I posted actually a little poll about this on Threads, and I just like asked people like, how many people in the last month have clicked on your author website? You know what I mean? And the numbers I was getting, I mean, it's just not happening. So the reality is people are spending money on their Squarespace, you know, on their Wix and things like that to get that one or two people that click on their website. And I was like, I used to have an author website as well. But then I was like, you know what? It's just not getting, people can find me, but I was like, how can I build something that people actually turn to? You know what I mean? And I think an author website is kind of hard to do that. But if I offer a website that has different services, like, hey, we have our podcasts, we have a webinar we do to kind of give you some ideas for turning your poetry into a course or a workshop. We have a blog. We have all these sorts of things that kind of act to get people to actually click onto the site, you know, and in a relatively short amount of time, we're able to get more people viewing our website, you know, than most writers are able to get clicking on theirs. You know what I mean?
Right. So here's the question. Would you yourself go to somebody else's author website for what?
For that, that's the question. Why would I go there? Because I think, I mean, this is probably the biggest issue I see with writers is that everyone's making books. Everyone's making books. I got my book. I made my book. I made my book. I'm writing my book. I'm writing my book. I think you and I are very business minded. And I think a lot of people that leaves a bad taste, but I think they're misunderstanding what that means.
Yes.
If you're in business, in my opinion, your goal is to inspire change and to serve. Your goal is to help people. If I'm not helping people, they're not going to come to me. You know what I mean? And I can't do anything. I can have the greatest impact on people if I help them. And the problem is when you're writing just a book, who are you helping? And I think if you dig deep enough, the answer to that question is you're helping yourself because you have your own urge to write that you are satisfying. And that's cool. And that's, I don't have a problem with that. That's not wrong. But we also need to be honest because if the answer is that, oh, I'm writing for myself, I published this book for me. Well, then we also can't be upset when no one's buying my book. No one's talking to me about my book. No one's clicking on my book. You know what I mean?
That's why I said we have very similar lanes and parallels because we think the same in many regards because that is a defense mechanism. If we're going to be honest, no one is publishing a book for themselves. That makes no sense. You're not going to spend money and time and effort writing and publishing a book for yourself. You wrote and published the book for others to read it and for it to help them. However, if it does not reach them, it will not help them. Without the mindset of learning how to reach them, you will not help them. In turn, you will not sell the book. You won't even give the book away, right? Mm-hmm. I had that comment that, or that response on Threads, you know, because I posted, I said, never publish a book without a plan to sell it, you know?
And people attack that. That's wild.
Attacked it. You can publish it whenever, however you want to. I said, okay, so let me ask you this one question. What did I say in response? I said, whether you want to sell it or give it away, you still need a plan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 100%. Because free is very powerful if you know how to use it. Free for the sake of free is horrible, but like free with a plan, super powerful.
Free with a plan is powerful because it then produces new opportunities. Mm-hmm. So for me, I'm not on the bandwagon of hating exposure. Mm-hmm. I'm not on the bandwagon of hating people who offer exposure because I understand with a business mind, I understand that money is one form of value. It's one form of value exchange, right? You the artist have the value in the talent, right? But if I don't have a budget and I'm offering exposure, you the talent can then say to me, okay, in lieu of that financial compensation or that value exchange, can I get a table to sell my books? Can you promote me before and after the event? It's a number of ways to be compensated. Can you tap me into your colleagues who can then pay me, who do have budgets, right? Refer me to three other opportunities that can pay me. And that's not a problem. That's called strategic exposure.
It's such a valuable tool. Like, I mean, God, we could spend hours just talking pricing. You know, I think that a lot of times people get, this is definitely more businessy than like poetry-y, but like the idea that like a price being like a final thing and it's like take it or leave it. It's like, no, it's never that. It's always, we can always negotiate and find a way around, you know, if you're willing to. And if, because it can actually be a turnoff. You could lose opportunities if you're not willing to do that. So like those sorts of negotiations, like, hey, okay, let's do half, but then you're going to help me with this other event I plan on doing or something like that. You know, there's ways, if you want to be creative, you can be as creative as you want, especially if it's your own business. That can be difficult if you're with someone else's business. But another reason why you probably want to be starting your own thing, because then you have that freedom. It's very rewarding if you can.
The freedom. And no one is saying leave your 9-to-5. No one. I mean, I'm going to say no one is saying it. There are people saying it, but I like multiple streams of income.
Yes.
Right. And I appreciate the 9-to-5, but strategy wise and purpose wise, my purpose is more high priority than my 9-to-5 if my 9-to-5 is not in the lane of my purpose.
Yes.
Right? And that's my barometer of whether it's a 9-to-5 or a business, because I was created for a reason. I was created on and with purpose. Right. And I have to pursue that because I'm here for a reason. And so I got to discover that, or I have to reveal that to myself so I can present that. If I have gifts, I understand that the gifts that I've been given are for me to maximize them and create a case study for me to repackage the gift and give it to other people.
Right. I mean, the word is gift.
Gift. Gifting. And back to the point earlier, it's not just for you. Your poetry is not just for you.
I think that's, you're getting into some arguments that I think can be difficult for some people to understand that. Mm-hmm. By not being able to reach a wider audience with something that you have been, you know, bestowed with or gifted with or talented with, in some ways that actually ends up being actually a very selfish act.
There it is.
Business is your way, ironically, to some people, of being less selfish, because you're actually providing solutions and help and service to other people.
Yep. Yep. I think we get discombobulated with the obvious greedy people, you know, who do people bad, and you know,
and they are out there. I don't, they are definitely out there. Sure.
But let's not blanket all business to be greed and capitalism and like let's not do that, because you limit yourself to not leveraging the mindset of a business person. Here's the thing. Here's where it shatters everything. You wrote a book, right? And what people don't understand is a book is a product. And individuals don't have products. People don't have products. Businesses have products. So you're already trying to do business without a business. So you're limiting yourself from getting that product to the people who need it. You created a product that people need, and you're saying that that product is for you. But let's be honest, That's a defense mechanism, because you have not figured out how to get the product to the people who need it.
And the reason you haven't done that oftentimes is because you're not interested in putting in the work, because you think that's not the work, because you think that the writing itself is the work.
That's the beginning of the work. Yeah, man. Like let's, if we're going to talk about it and we're going to do this, we have to be honest, bro. We literally have to be honest. And I see it all the time. And that's why I try to make sure that I'm not coming off as beating them up.
It's hard. Some people view it as antagonistic.
Yeah.
I see that.
But I want them to hear my heart, to understand that, listen, I know, you know, you love what you created, but what you created is it may have been for you at first. It helped you, but wouldn't you want it to help somebody else? Of course, yeah, I wanted to help somebody else. Blah, blah, blah. Okay. So how are you going to get it to that person if they know nothing about you? You're right. Mm-hmm. All right, cool. Mm-hmm. All right, cool. Now we're talking now. All right, we're not arguing. This is not, it really is not an argument.
It's we're on just, the same team.
It's just enlightenment, and you just didn't know. So now that you know, here's the thing. When you know better, you should do better. Not, mm-hmm. right? You know, because we all know better and we all do stuff we shouldn't do, right? So it's, if you know better, you should. Now that you have the information, I'm not saying that you need to go start a whole corporation, but you do need to do the basics at the very least to because even if you didn't get it to the people or they know about you, if you don't have the customer service in place, mm-hmm. and the experience to take people through, they're not going to want it. And the packaging of the book, they're not going to even want to read what's in the book that could help them.
It's true.
So you got to go through the process and do the work to make the thing that you created attractive enough for them to read it.
It's yes. I get it. Everyone just wants to do the creating part. No one wants to do the other stuff.
Yeah, it's the craft without the path. You can't.
Presentation is really important. Presentation is super important. Presentation a lot of times is more important than the craft itself.
Yeah.
Megan Fox, I've only read a few poems. Megan Fox has, for instance, just released a poetry book. Uh-huh. It's the top selling poetry book probably of 2023. A lot of poets who've, you know, gotten their MFAs and things may not like the book of poetry that she just published. A lot of people who also got their MFAs are probably not going to release a poetry book that's as widely published as hers. A number that I always love to kind of throw out. Let's imagine this is a true story, but let's kind of make it an imaginary one just a moment. Imagine you win the Pulitzer. How many people do you think are going to buy your book at a minimum? At a minimum.
Well, just ask the question. Have you bought a book that won a Pulitzer?
I personally have, but a lot of people. But I think you're on the right line.
The average person.
You know, right. So a lot of people.
No, I haven't.
From that mindset, if I told you that one of the worst selling books, and it happened relatively recently within the last 5-10 years, I think, I forget that it was a work of translation, I believe, sold 400 copies, won the Pulitzer, a global award, won the Pulitzer, sold 400 copies.
Listen, my 6-year-old daughter published a book and we sold 600 books.
You sold more copies. Your daughter sold more copies than a Pulitzer Prize winning collection. Tell her that. Go after this.
You know, It listen, that's why I don't harp on algorithm. I don't harp on followers. I focus on enhancing the product and enhancing the experience and enhancing the package. Right. And that come obviously marketing is all in there. But yeah, no, I don't need a million followers. One, because the organizations that we serve don't care about all of that. Yeah. They want to know, can you do the job? Can you help us with engagement? Can you help us engage with our audience more creatively and more attractively? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And our other audience, the poets, can you help me do more with my poetry? And right. can I do this without a bunch of followers? Yes, you can. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's true.
So, yeah, man. I love this conversation. And I know you got to head out, man. I appreciate this collaboration.
Likewise.
I appreciate this collaboration, man, this conversation. And I encourage everyone listening and watching to go to, oh, one last question. Mm-hmm. Tell me about Diverses. Where'd you get the name? And just tell me about the organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the 2 second pitch would be Diverses is professional poetry development. The 4 second pitch would be professional poetry development for underrepresented writers. And basically what our goal is, we're trying to get people to take their writing to a level that can sustain them personally and also financially. And we're especially dedicated to underrepresented writers. I mentioned earlier, I'm as a biracial poet myself. Underrepresented voices are big things that we're trying to work on. You know, we've done things, for instance, we created our own poetry journal. We still have to make a second issue for, which is, you know, focused on underrepresented voices. It's called Collective. It's a little bit unique because the poets choose the poets. So all the poets from our first issue, I basically just asked them personally. They gave me the names of the poet that they want for the next issue. So then we had to send out some request letters and things to them. And then it kind of just goes off from there. But it's all about trying to remove the gatekeeping and trying to open up the opportunity for everyone to get their work out into the world.
What does Diverses mean?
I mean, there's the play, obviously, with verses, so the connection with poetry, and then there's also the diverse aspect, because, again, we're really dedicated to that multiracial, multi-ethnic approach. So it's that kind of unification.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I love it, man. Thank you so much for this collaboration, this conversation.
Thank you so much. Most I'm excited definitely. For where this goes. I'm excited yes, for
the future, man. Where can people find you?
You can find me. You can find us on Diverses. A lot of our social media platforms are at Diverses Poetry. You can also find us at diversespoetry.com.
Beautiful. Y'all go check diversespoetry.com out and everywhere online. As you can tell, they've made themselves easily to be found. And
we're
I
try it, man. Everybody.
Yeah. Just like the Poet Life is everything everywhere. And just add.com for the website. Mm-hmm. Same with you. Listen, if you all are looking to do more with your poetry, go to poetrybusinessnetwork.com. If you want to learn more about the Poet Life, go to thepoetlife.com. Listen, it's the Poet Life Podcast. And Jeff, thank you so much, man. I appreciate you.
Hey, Christoph, thanks for having me, man. It's been a pleasure.
Sounds good. Most definitely. Appreciate you.